Welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Friday, March the 5th, 2021. On this edition of the Politocrat, last night and now, it's still stimulus-less in America. The state of affairs, just so that you can get a few crumbs. It really feels like feudal times, doesn't it?
And B, the Inspector General of the Department of the Treasury, an amount to not to exceed $2.6 million for oversight of the program under the section. Two, for states, after the application of paragraphs 1, 4, and 5 of the subsection and subject to paragraph 3 of the subsection, the Secretary shall allocate the remaining funds available within the Homeowners Assistance Fund to each state of the United States, the District of Columbia, and the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, based on homeowner needs for such state relative to all states of the United States, the District of Columbia, and the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, as the date of the enactment of this act, which is determined by reference to A, the average number of unemployed individuals measured over a period of time not fewer than 3 months and not more than 12 months, and B, the total number of mortgagers with one, mortgage payments that are more than 30 days past due, or two, mortgages in foreclosure.
That was the state of affairs that carried on until 2:05 a.m. Eastern Time this morning. And here was, or were, the final moments of the reading of a bill that took almost 11 hours, non-stop, 628 pages, thanks to the Senate Republican, Ron Johnson, who compelled this on the floor. And by the way, within the rules of the U.S. Senate,
$85 million shall be for awards to entities eligible to receive grants under Section 6304A1 of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965, 20 U.S.C. 7544A1 for activities authorized under Section 6304A23 of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965, 20 U.S.C. 7544A23 and other related activities.
Madam President.
The junior senator from Maryland.
Madam President, I ask unanimous consent that when the Senate completes its business today, it adjourn until 9 a.m. Friday, March 5th.
Welcome back. It's absolutely infuriating. We have Republicans who are absolutely reprehensible creatures. I mean, these people are really disgusting people because in the name of politics, they are absolutely disregarding any notion that they care about you, about me, about anyone. They do not care. These individuals are only doing one thing, shilling for the billionaire class that donates to their campaign. And the moment, the second that they step out of line, they are going to be primaried. I am not justifying the Republicans. I am calling them every bit the cowards that they are. These people do not have any sense of duty to the American public. This is something that is not a revelation. This is something that you have known and I have known, dear listener, for many a year, many a decade. It's been 60 years of this. I mean, this is not a mystery anymore. And what we have now is really where the Republican Party, now the Nazi Party, and I know some might take great offense to my characterization of the Republican Party in the United States. But I think anybody who has any discernible observations over the last just year, let alone the last four, I think it's pretty clear where the Republican Party is and where it's been actually for quite some time. This is not something that just happened last week or even the last 4 years. Now, I've talked about that many times here on this podcast. So I want to stipulate that Ron Johnson, the Republican who is called Russia Ron for a very good reason. This is a guy who is knee deep, if not, well, on his knees for Vladimir Putin. I mean, we all know that. Very clear what Ron Johnson's up to. Wisconsin, this is the guy who shouldn't be in the Senate. And Wisconsin voters, and we know what's going on with the gerrymandering in Wisconsin and the Senate Republicans in the state of Wisconsin, in the Senate legislature there, and what they've been up to. Republicans are leaving that party that's now a new party called the Nazi Party. Well, a new old party, because the Nazis have always been around, haven't they? I mean, yes, they were defeated in World War II, but what happened was is that their descendants retreated, or at least some of the people around retreated, and then they started to plot again. Kind of like a delayed whack-a-mole. And what you're now seeing is the germination and now the growth of the Nazis in the United States. And no, they don't have to actively have swastikas on. But some of their fans do. Some of them unfurl banners inside arenas when politicians who are Jewish, like Bernie Sanders, as he spoke last year in Arizona in an arena there, unfurled a swastika. And by the way, the corporate news media in the United States didn't cover it. It got scant, if zero, coverage. Democracy Now! They covered it, of course. Amy Goodman, all the great work that the people there do, and as does she. They covered it. That's how I found out about it. It's also on Instagram and Twitter as well. See this guy unfurling a Nazi, a swastika in 2020. And so many people openly doing this now. And I've talked about why I think this has happened. These Republicans do not care. They don't care. I think we all know that. So they are perfectly okay with you struggling, begging for crumbs. It's like a feudal system. It's the serfs and the people way down there on the bottom and the lords at the top, tippy top. And this is way past Marie Antoinette territory. She didn't actually even say let them eat cake, by the way. She didn't actually say that, but that's a whole nother thing. And that's a whole slightly different era. The feudal system in England. I mean, that's what we really have here now. Haven't we had that for a long time in the US? And we're seeing it come up in full effect right here, right now, with what Ron Johnson did, which was to have some poor clerks. I mean, sure, they're getting compensated, but still, if they were getting compensated by the word, say a dollar for every word they read of that 628-page bill, then they wouldn't have to do that ever again because they'd quit the Senate yesterday, wouldn't they? They would probably tell the employees, F you, I'm gone. Well, they wouldn't say that, but you know what I'm saying. Ron Johnson was sleeping while these 11 hours transpired. It was despicable. Despicable. Just imagine that you had. Imagine Hillary Clinton was testifying for nearly 11 hours in 2015 during her election campaign for the following year. And it was the House leader at the time. He wasn't the speaker. Kevin McCarthy, who admitted, well, we did it to hurt her election chances. Paul Ryan was speaker at the time. And Paul Ryan got out when the going was good. I think he knew, as dastardly as he is and was, he knew what was coming with his party. And he was done with them. I think after 2016 or 17, he exited, 2018 or whatever, after that election, he exited stage left because he knew what was happening and he probably was going to lose. And he said, I'm out. So that Wisconsinite left, and Ron Johnson, who is a despicable creature. This guy, I shouldn't be comparing them to creatures, but this is the effect. These are monstrous people. And I want to make that clear right off the top, because everybody listening to this knows that that's the truth. And I want voters in Wisconsin to straighten up and fly right. It's time to mobilize in Wisconsin and plot to get this guy out of office. There is just no other way around it. Hillary Clinton testified for nearly 11 hours in 2015, and you had Senate clerks for almost 11 hours straight. Reading every single word of a 628-page bill that Ron Johnson never laid eyes on. He didn't read this bill. None of these senators, very, very rarely do they ever read the entire bill. The only senator I can think of who has read entire bills or entire Mueller reports is Senator Elizabeth Warren. But Ron Johnson is absolutely disgusting. As are the rest of these Republicans. And it really is time. If you are dissatisfied with all the compromising and you're a Republican, still, and if you're someone who voted for one of these Republicans in the Senate, in the United States Senate, you need to really reevaluate that vote and really make it up to yourself to do something different next time. Vote for a Democrat that actually does care. Because most of the Democrats, the vast majority of the Democrats, do care. And this vote that happened after debate today, this vote to include a minimum wage, granted, 42 Democrats supported it. 8 did not, with 1 independent included. This is Bernie Sanders' amendment. And I want to get to that in just a few moments. Dear listener, did you know that there are now an additional 27 items, 27 brand new items available for your purchase right now at the Politocrat Daily Podcast online store, designed by yours truly, all the items you see designed by moi. And I gotta tell you, if you take a look for just a few minutes, a few seconds, I guarantee you'll like what you see. There's some really colorful, bright, warm colors that you can don. And with the spring coming, and spring is almost here, you will look even better than you already look. And I know you look good. And you'll look even better than that when you wear one of the t-shirts that I have designed. One of the items. There's hoodies even. If you're a hoodie person, I think you'll like what the hoodie collection has for you. And with the Love in Retro collection and the Kings and Queens collection, I think you'll really like what's in store. And there's more than that. There's artifacts in the audio experience. A new collection specially designed to some of the things that you hear often on this very podcast. The Dear Listener t-shirt. The Soothing Sounds and Sensations t-shirt. Try to say that three times fast. The Soothing Sounds and Sensations t-shirt. And the No Soundbite Zone t-shirt. And more. Oh, you've got to do this, please, dear listener. And you've been very loyal. So I'd like you to spend a little bit of time and a little bit of money, even in these difficult times, at the-politocrat.myshopify.com. Thank you very much for your support. Welcome back. The Democrats, 42 of them, supported the bill for $15 an hour to be included in the Senate bill. That was the amendment, actually, that was included. Not the bill. It was an amendment to the Senate bill to add the $15 an hour provision for the minimum wage. And that failed. 42 votes yes, 58 votes no. All 50 of the Republicans, as you would expect, because our expectations for Republicans aren't even on the scale. And the only expectation is that they are going to block everything that the average person needs, including the average person that voted for them. So we know that the Republican, or the Nazi Party, or whatever you wish to call them, are going to vote no on things that are life-affirming and pro-family. All this lies about, oh, yes, we're family values. Remember all that in the 90s and 80s? Family values. And all the stuff that happened when, in this country, the US of A, Candace Bergen was being relentlessly attacked. The entertainer Candace Bergen, like if I can spell, if I could pronounce her name, rather, that would be a start. Candace Bergen was completely, I mean, it was like a pack of wolves jumping. I mean, it was horrible what they did to try to do to her. But she fought back. And yeah, Dan Quayle and George H.W. and all of them absolutely trying to pillory Candace Bergen in Murphy Brown. Oh, family, all this rubbish. And then I remember she did an episode, I think, if I remember correctly. Maybe your memory much better than mine on this. That absolutely was a rejoinder. Absolutely returned fire, if you will, for lack of a better term, against these people in the White House at the time. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And this is the Family Values Party, the one that votes to end, in votes not to include minimum wage. That's great, isn't it? That's the Family Values Party that wants a woman to be forced into a choice rather than to let her make the choice. We want to have the choice to be made for her. That's what that party does. That's the Republicans, the Nazis. That's them. The Handmaid's Tale Party. Do you want that? I mean, maybe that's the party they should be. Do you want to call them the Handmaid's Tale Party? Paging Margaret Atwood,
please, on that. The Handmaid's Tale Party. Clean up on aisle five, please.
What's going on? I think we know what's going on, don't we? So, all 50 of the Republicans in the Senate voted no. We are the pro-family values party is voting no to families. What else is new? Up is down and black is white. I mean, come on now. White is black. Day is night. So they voted against it. And then 8 Democrats, well, specifically 7 Democrats and 1 independent who caucuses with the Democrats. So in all intents and purposes, it's 8 Democrats who voted with the Republicans. I'm going to give you the names, just in case you didn't know. The names of the Hateful Eight. And yes, that's what I call them. Quentin Tarantino's nasty little film, notwithstanding, from several years back. But these are the Hateful Eight, to go with the Hateful 50. You know, the 47 traitors plus the three, they're all traitors, aren't they? And the real traitors in that party, not all of them, because there were seven Republicans who actually had a conscience last month. Cassidy, Collins, Murkowski, Burr, Toomey, Sass. I think that's all of them that I can remember. I don't remember if that's maybe six or seven. But anyway, they all had a conscience. They actually, for once, did the right thing. But in this instance, they did not. So all 50 of them, and then eight Democrats. The Hateful Eight. Here are the names of the Hateful Eight of these Democrats. These eight Democrats decided, no, we're going to put politics ahead of our constituents and their economic and financial needs and the needs of their families. For a lousy, $15 an hour as a minimum wage isn't even that much. If you look at other countries, and I love to talk about Denmark and other countries beyond Denmark, this isn't even a thing for them. Here are the eight Democrats. Tom Carper of Delaware. These are the senators. Tom Carper of Delaware, John Tester of Montana, Joe Manchin of West Virginia. You can always count on him to let you down in matters most important to you. If you are here in the U.S., you know this. He is a Democrat, and yes, I'd rather have a Democrat in that position. But when he does stuff like this, I know it's a conservative state, I know. But come on now. In West Virginia in 2018, there was a statewide teachers' strike. What is more progressive than a strike to get better wages and better treatment for teachers and school bus drivers and the kids? Better meals, better facility. What's more progressive than that in West Virginia? And we can't get a progressive to run against Joe Manchin whenever he's up for re-election. We better start doing that, West Virginia. And if any person from West Virginia is listening to the sound of my voice right now, you really should organize. Or join up with groups there who are organizing. Because now is the time to make sure that you run progressives in West Virginia who actually will put the constituents of West Virginia, the people of West Virginia, first. I'm sure that most people in West Virginia supported a hike of the minimum wage. I will bet you that most of them did. Come on now. If West Virginia teachers can strike statewide for weeks, I don't know if it was a week or 2 weeks, whatever it was, a month, 2 months, whatever it was, and they got what they wanted, better wages, better wage increase. Why can't someone in West Virginia run against Joe Manchin on the Democratic side? Primary the guy. I almost said it. Two words that I say often on Twitter. I mean, if you really want to hear or see, read curse words, you can go to Twitter at @ReEL. You will read plenty of them. Sometimes they will be in capital letters, uppercase letters. Oh dear, I was really on it last night. I can tell you that now. Don't get me started about black people and this bullcrap about black folk. Oh, we are cheap tippers, because you're going to hear from me. Now, I'm not diverting too much. I am. I know I am, really. But the notion that black people don't tip is a bunch of crap. We are, I would say, very close to, if not the best tippers. I think we are the best tippers. Based on my conversations with taxi cab drivers and hoteliers, some of these rich folk, and some, well, I'm going to just stop, because I'm going to get myself into some... Well, look, let me just get back to what I'm getting into here. Joe Manchin can be primaried, okay? So we can go on Twitter and get all outraged, which we should, and social media in general. But where's the plan? We need to do that. Find the organizations in West Virginia and join up with them, please. Join up with any progressive organization, because these people are showing their backsides to us now. This is what's happening. Joe Manchin is showing his backside to us. And we need to get a progressive to run against him when he runs again. And we cannot afford to have short memories. I keep referring to that South Carolina archivist. The white man who's the archivist there at this place, I forget where. It could have been in the South Carolina halls of their state Congress or whatever. I don't remember. And he said, if we don't grow or develop long memories, we are not free. We're going to lose our freedom. And he's absolutely correct. If we don't develop long memories, we are done for. And it's already happening. It's as if nothing matters anymore, because you've got this 24-hour news cycle that really is a 24-second news cycle now. And aided and abetted by your lovely social media that you and I are on. It's nanoseconds now. It's 24 nanosecond news cycles, isn't it? Especially on Twitter. Especially. This is the road we're going down. Social media companies aren't being responsible. And it's contributing to this extreme short memory that we have. And short-term memory loss is different from what I'm talking about, okay? I'm not trying to malign a condition that's serious at all. This is something a little bit different. This is about our collective consciousness and our memory and our ability to retain events in our brains. We only use 8% of our brains, dear listener. 8%. And the other 92, I don't know if that's just filled with, well, I don't know. I just don't know. We don't use the 92%. And the 8% that we're using has been flooded with noise and garbage. And people have already forgotten what happened last week. I mean, people have already almost forgotten Tiger Woods getting severely hurt. You're not hearing anything about that anymore. Barely. I mean, I'm not trying to... Look, Tiger Woods, come on. Look, I mean, look, there's a million things going on in our lives that are much more immediate and pressing. That was just the person that I thought of off the top of my head. I wasn't trying to make any statement about Tiger or anything else. It was just is more of a figurative, metaphorical thing that is kind of indicative of what's going on, right? And so we've got to remember this so that we can get Manchin out of office and replace Manchin with a progressive Democrat. Please. Can we do that, please? I really would love for that in West Virginia, so that we don't have this mealy mouth stuff. And I know it's a conservative state, but that's not good enough anymore. Georgia was a conservative state. Arizona was a conservative state. I'm going to get to Arizona in just a moment. But that didn't stop Joe Biden from winning in both those places. It didn't stop both those places from electing Democratic senators. The will is there. Both of those states have Democratic senators, two Democratic senators in each state, Arizona and Georgia. There's no excuse now. We cannot retreat and compromise. President Biden, compromise these corporate Democrats, compromise. We vote them in and then we get eggs thrown at us. That's the contempt, as I've told you before, dear listener, the contempt that the corporate wing of the Democratic Party has for you and for me here in the United States. And if you're listening from afar, from abroad, from overseas, I think you know this too. I think you've seen this. And you have seen the political situations in your countries. And you see what's going on. I mean, in the United Kingdom, my native country, my God. I mean, people have already, some people have already begun to accept that this is the way it's got to be with Boris Johnson running riot and Priti Patel having to pay out £340,000 and really not blink an eye. She bullied people. I've talked about this before. I talked about it, mentioned it even yesterday, the day before's episode. I had a conversation with the leader of the FDA, the union in England. Spoke to him. I believe his name is Dave Penman. I remember his name well. I remember speaking to him. We spoke last year, late last year, November or December of last year. May have been December. May have been November, actually. I whatever month it was in the last quarter of 2020. Nothing's being done. The ministerial code means nothing to Priti Patel. I talked about the ministerial code yesterday as well with the day before, whichever day it was, with Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon of the Scottish National Party. It's staggering. The stuff that Boris Johnson and the Conservatives are getting with in the UK, in England, in the UK in general. It's really frightening, actually. And we've got to develop long memories politically. And the approval ratings for Boris Johnson are going up. And the approval ratings for Labour are struggling. Like 13 to 16 points behind. And all of the, everybody seems to, because people aren't caring. When Chuck Schumer talked about this, a friend of his back in January, he said this. A friend of his shrugged his shoulders when learning of what the terrorist attack on January 6th, shrugged his shoulders. An older person too, shrugging their shoulders. Older meaning someone in their 70s or 80s. And I don't think 70s old at all. 80s, shrugging your shoulders at a terror attack. I wonder if they would have shrugged their shoulders at what happened in Nazi Germany, what happened in the camps. Would they have shrugged their shoulders at Treblinka? Would they have shrugged their shoulders at Buchenwald? Would they have shrugged their shoulders at Auschwitz? I mean, this is the thing that's frightening. People are forgetting. And what's more than that even, there are people who just do not care. Nothing fazes them. Because maybe their iPhones are the thing that count the most. This is where we are. And we should be excoriating these Republicans. Excoriating them. For doing what they did. I mean, I almost flippantly said, well, that's what you expect from them. But we shouldn't expect that from them. And we shouldn't expect that from anybody, including the Democratic Party, corporate leadership, any of them. This is unacceptable. Manchin, I didn't even get through the rest of the list. I'm going to get through the rest of the list of the Hateful Eight. Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema. Arizona, the state that voted for President Joe Biden, the state that voted for two Democratic senators, including Kyrsten Sinema a few years ago. But the new senator, Mark Kelly, did not join Kyrsten Sinema because Mark Kelly knows where his bread's buttered. And he knows what the deal is. He cares about the constituents. Kyrsten Sinema. Oh, I don't want that I don't want that $15 an hour provision in there. Oh, God. That is an indentured servant wage. I mean, are we not? Let's. And they didn't get that. I mean, come on. I shouldn't even say indentured servant. That is absolutely peanuts, folks. Oh, but no, I'm not going to vote for it. So that's Kyrsten Sinema. She's not voting for it. I think a progressive should be running against her as well in Arizona. Make her feel some heat. Not just the Arizona sun either. I'm talking about political heat. Again, all of these people are showing their backsides to you. And in Arizona right now, if you're listening to me there, dear listener, from there, I really do think you should start to look at organizing. This is at the heart of how you survive, how your kids get fed. And if you're working three jobs or were working three jobs, and you're relying on a provision and extras as extras for you to pay bills with, and you've got senators like this voting against that, they're taking money out your pocket. They are literally taking money out of your pocket. And New Hampshire Senator Maggie Hassan votes are taking money out of your pocket too, as did Maine Senator, the independent Angus King. And I've had a word or two about Angus King here, haven't I? If you remember from a few short months ago, ooh, did I go to town? Angus King. Dear, oh dear. This is really bad. When you've got people who say they represent you, and they show their backsides to you instead with their vote, their contempt for you and your family. If you're surviving on barely minimum wage, barely, you might not even be working. And no, they don't care. All of these people make a lot of money. Some of them are millionaires. Many of them are millionaires. And they don't care. Angus King is very financially comfortable. I can imagine he must be. All of them are. Chris Coons of Delaware. In fact, both he and Tom Carper, both of them did the Delaware double. Tom Carper and Chris Coons, they're both buddies of Joe Biden's. Joe Biden loves them. Joe Biden tried to get Chris Coons on his administration, tried to get him in. He was one of the final four, final picks, final considerations. Their relationship goes back decades. I can't tell you. I mean, this is the Delaware double. Tom Carper has been good friends with President Biden for a long time as well, decades. And both of them voted against a $15 an hour provision for the, in this bill. Bernie's bill was DOA, 42 for it, 58 against. And Tom Carper and Chris Coons, out of the state of Delaware, Joe Biden's adopted state. It's just ridiculous, isn't it? I think that you really should be organizing in Delaware. And I hope that people don't forget this. I think they're counting on you forgetting. And, oh, well, you know. I'm serious. Because in 2022, if you want a Republican Senate and a Republican House, this would be the way for that to happen. For eight Democrats to say, yeah, I'm voting with you guys. And then try to turn around and run on a platform that I'm like a Republican, vote for me. And you know what Truman said about this, President Harry Truman, back in the 40s, late 40s. I'll paraphrase it. If people have to pick between an actual Republican and a Democrat pretending to be a Republican, they will pick the actual Republican every time. They will vote for that person. And Jeanne Shaheen, the senator out of New Hampshire, I think that's a New Hampshire double. I forget. I always get mixed up between whether Hassan's in Maine or not. I don't think she's in Maine. I think she's New Hampshire. And if I get that wrong, I apologize. Jean Shaheen is New Hampshire as well. She used to be the governor of that state. And Daily Doubles, they don't care. They don't care. They've put their donors ahead of the people they are supposed to serve. And that gets a round of applause from the Hateful Eight Peanut Gallery. It's incredible. I can barely speak. I mean, this is really a bad look. It tells you everything that you already knew about the United States. That this country's the richest in the world and all of that. But look at how it treats the most vulnerable of its own citizenry. This is an indictment. There is still negotiation going on. And by the time you listen to that, I would imagine that the negotiation would have finished 3 hours, 4 hours after a vote was taken to defeat Bernie Sanders' amendment. They're negotiating for the next amendment. We've not got anywhere near. I mean, this is just, you know, again, 11, there was no provisos. I'll say this again. There was nothing, there was no one saying, oh, let's have someone read out a bill for a billion hours before these billionaire tax cuts got passed. Like, no one, no Democrat, no one. I'm telling you, I can barely talk because, I mean, I know I'm not like I'm surprised by this. You're not surprised by it either. You knew this. When it comes to the American public having their interests and needs met, you've got millionaires among the 100 in the Senate who somehow are hemming and hawing. And most of them, and these are Republican millionaires, and a couple of Democratic ones too. Well, or some who are people who are very well off if they're not millionaires or billionaires. And there's excuses. 8 Democrats came up with an excuse not to vote for you. We respond not by voting for Republicans. We respond by voting for progressive Democrats. And I'm telling you, the way this is going, though, if you've got Democrats voting against minimum wage provisions, you will have a Senate that's Republican controlled in no time at all, because people are going to be fed up with it. And I'm telling you, they're not going to vote, and they're going to end up having these Republicans voting in a controlled Republican Senate and a controlled Republican House. Although the House, they've passed their bill, I think, earlier this week with the provision for $15 an hour in it. They certainly did. And also they passed voting protection acts and all kinds of good stuff this week that I haven't even got to, which I promise to soon. And not in this episode, but I hope in the next day or two, because I've got to talk about that so that you are aware of the things that the House Democrats are doing that benefit you. How can you have control of the Democratic, of the House, of the Senate, and the White House, and still be compromising with these Republicans? How can you possibly do that? People voted up a storm, especially in Georgia. I can barely speak. Georgia, they voted up a storm for you. And you turn around and you stab them like this with a $15 an hour provision. Come on now. You've got to do better than this. You've got to do better than this, Democrats. Jamie Harrison, I'm paging you, calling on you, sir. You can't keep asking us for money in emails and have eight of the people in your party turn around and moon us and say that $15 an hour is a bridge too far to be in a provision and vote that down, and you want money from us, Mr. Chair? Come on now. We need to talk. Welcome back. So you're going to hear now a couple of snippets from some speeches from yesterday, Thursday, March the 4th, 2021, on the Senate floor. You're going to hear from Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut, and you're going to hear after that from Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, the Independent, who caucuses with the Democrats. Both of them are essentially saying the same thing, albeit slightly differently. Now, Senator Murphy is a moderate Democrat, a corporate Democrat, blue dog, and Bernie Sanders is not. He's an independent, he's progressive, and he is looked at often as the quote-unquote most liberal member of the United States Senate. And I would probably agree with that. But again, labels are optional here. They're optional. I that word liberal is not one I really like. I'm not particularly comfortable with it. I've said why. And this is not a matter of semantics. When I talk about language, when I talk about terminology, this is not semantics. Language and words have meaning. And I know you know that. We both know that. We all know that, right? You and I. We know that words mean something. And words are powerful, and they can hurt, and they can heal. It depends on the ones you use. And the same goes for all the things I discuss here, the things we talk about, the things you talk about in your life. The words you use are everything. And once those are uttered, and they come from your vocal cords and are released as sound waves into the world, and they are heard, what is being released is everything. And how that's heard is everything. I mean, if you're there saying things that are toxic, well, we saw what happened on January 6th, don't we? Didn't we? 2021, because I know you didn't forget that from almost exactly 2 months ago. So much went on this week that I didn't even cover on this regular Monday through Friday. But I'm going to get to some of it over this weekend. And including, again, the stuff that the House Democrats did. And yes, I'm going to be talking about some things that aren't in the political realm here. But there are going to be something that I'm sure you'll be tuned into here in the United States this weekend. It rhymes with Oprah. And it rhymes with Meghan Markle. And it rhymes with Prince Harry. Yeah, I'll be weighing in on that too. A little bit. A little bit, not much. But that's a whole nother thing as we get into the weekend. But I want you to hear, first of all, again, Senator Chris Murphy, Democrat from Connecticut, followed by Bernie Sanders, the independent from Vermont, whose bill today was voted down. The provision, rather, the amendment was voted down. That would have been to add the $15 an hour to this Senate bill, which, by the way, Vice President Harris didn't do. She could have done this herself, and she didn't. And I think that's a bad look for her. You know, that's a bad look. It'll be forgotten when she runs for president in 2024. It'll be forgotten, quite frankly. But I think she should have stepped in here and used her power as president of the Senate to do this, rather than, oh, I'm going to just leave it to the senators. There's a lot of things being left to people that should not be. Lamar Alexander, when he was in the Senate, the Republican from Tennessee, I'm going to leave this to the American people. We know. This is what he said in 2020, a year ago. We know that he did it. We know he violated, he committed high crimes and misdemeanors with the phone call to Ukraine. But, you know, we'll leave it to the American public in the election. and you're abdicating your duty as a senator, like Mitch McConnell did when he failed deliberately. He didn't fail. He deliberately blocked Merrick Garland. It's a Senate responsibility to hear and advise and consent with the president and advise and consent the senatorial body on the nominee for the Supreme Court, Merrick Garland. We know what happened. And Merrick Garland is going to get confirmed sometime next week by the full Senate. But it's taken until early March. And we're still at the time. By the time you listen to this, I don't think there will be a vote until tomorrow on this package, this $1.9 trillion. Savage, isn't it? I give you now Senator Murphy, followed by Senator Sanders. And this was from yesterday, Thursday.
I've heard different statistics thrown out by my Republican friends. Some of them suggest only 5% of this bill is COVID relief. And I'm not sure exactly how they come to that calculation. But what I understand them to say is that anything that isn't directly related to putting shots in people's arms or treating people with present cases of COVID is not COVID relief. Well, let's just take a look at what was broadly part of the CARES Act that was supported by every single Republican and what is broadly part of the American Rescue Plan. Because my Republican colleagues thought that everything in the CARES Act was COVID relief, whether it was designed to immediately attack the healthcare crisis or whether it was designed to address the economic crisis. There were stimulus checks in the CARES Act, not as big as the ones in the American Rescue Plan, but they were COVID relief when we passed the CARES Act. Now, according to Republicans, they're not COVID relief. There was an unemployment extension and a plus up in the maximum benefit under the CARES Act. That was COVID relief back in March of last year. But now, according to Republicans, it's not COVID relief. There was money for vaccines and for testing in the CARES Act. In the American Rescue Plan, money for vaccines, testing. Small business relief was, of course, conceived in the CARES Act, the PPP program. That's a big part of the American Rescue Plan. But now it's not COVID relief, according to my Republican colleagues, whereas it was last year. There was state and local funding in the CARES Act. There's state and local funding in the American Rescue Plan. There was rent and mortgage relief in the CARES Act. There's rent and mortgage relief in the American Rescue Plan. All of a sudden, since Democrats took control of the White House and took control of the Senate, all of these things, which were categorized as COVID relief by Republicans in March, are no longer COVID relief. You're just supposed to think of these as extras, as Democratic priorities. 90%, 95% of what's in the package we're voting on today is simply an extension of the same set of funding streams that we authorized in a bipartisan way a year ago. And so this idea that this is some Democratic wish list when we are essentially just extending or increasing the same funding streams that were in the CARES Act is nonsense. It's nonsense. Of course this is all COVID relief. Of course it is COVID relief when you are increasing nutritional benefits to people who can't afford to feed their kids because they've lost their job or they've lost hours because the economy melted down due to a pandemic. That is not all of a sudden not COVID relief today. This one is maybe the most bizarre of Republican claims. This bill is expensive, but it is not too expensive. This moment is unique, and we are mandated by our oath of office to meet this moment. Republicans didn't have a problem spending $1.9 trillion to give tax breaks to their wealthy friends. I don't know why they all of a sudden have a problem putting money into the pockets of hardworking Americans who are suffering through the worst health care crisis this country has seen in a century. Republicans say this is a partisan bill. Out there in America, guess what? It is not. Republicans and Democrats support this because it's full of common sense ideas that make a lot of sense to people, no matter what their political ideology is outside of Washington. Republicans say this bill isn't COVID relief. It's a Democratic progressive wish list. No, it's simply an extension of the things that were bipartisan priorities last year. We thought they were good ideas then. We think they're good ideas now, especially given the fact that 3 to 4 times as many people are dying today as were dying in March of 2020 when we passed the first bipartisan CARES Act, where the economy today is in just as dire straits as it was.
Is the most significant piece of legislation to come to the floor of the Senate in decades in terms of addressing the crises facing working families. As part of that piece of legislation, I will be offering an amendment to raise the federal minimum wage from $7.25 an hour, which I believe is a starvation wage, to $15 an hour over a 5-year period, 5 years. And I think there's been some miscommunication around here, and there are people who are saying it's going from 7.25 to $15 an hour in 1 year. Not true. Goes from 7.25 to 9.50 to 11 to 12.50 to 14 to $15 an hour. So anyone who says we're raising the minimum wage in 1 year in the midst of a pandemic to $15 an hour is simply not telling the truth. Mr. President, this amendment is similar to a bill which I have brought forth, the Raise the Wage Act, which I am proud to say has been co-sponsored by some 38 members of the Senate. And this is also similar to legislation which has already passed the U.S. House of Representatives. And I thank them, and I thank my friends in the Progressive Caucus in the House for doing a great job in pushing this legislation. I should also add for my Senate colleagues that this legislation raising the minimum wage is supported by some 300 national organizations, including the 12 million members of the AFL-CIO and virtually every major union in this country. This is something that unions like the SEIU, one of the largest unions in this country, have been fighting for a very long time. And I should also add here that while raising the minimum wage is going to impact every low-wage worker in this country, because African-American and Latino workers often are earning poverty wages, it significantly impacts the lives of the minority communities as well. And that is why, among so many other organizations supporting this amendment, it is supported by the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights. It is supported by the National Organization for Women, because again, when we talk about low-wage workers, we're talking about the minority community. We're talking about women. And that is why it's supported by groups like UNIDOS, the American Association of University Women, Indivisible, Justice for Migrant Women, the National Domestic Workers Alliance, and the National Women's Law Center. So once again, this is legislation that will increase wages for 30 million American workers. And if you ask me what the great economic crisis in our country is today, it's not just high unemployment. It's not just income and wealth inequality. It is that half of our people today and before the pandemic were living paycheck to paycheck. Their wages were so low that if they had a problem with their car or their kid got sick, suddenly they were in financial crisis. And in the richest country in the history of the world, half of our people should not be facing economic desperation when their car breaks down. And the reason for that is significantly that many millions of workers are earning starvation wages, and I underline that, starvation wages in this country. I'd love to hear anybody get up here and tell me that they could live on $7.25 an hour. They could live on $8 an hour. They could live on $9 an hour. You can't. And I've been all over this country, and I have talked to workers who are making $10-11 an hour with tears streaming down their cheeks, telling me what it's like to work for starvation wages and try to raise your kids. So the time is long overdue. Last time this Congress passed an increase in the minimum wage was in the year 2007. It is time to raise the minimum wage. It is time to raise the minimum wage to a living wage of $15 an hour. Now, later on today, or this evening, as part of my support for this enormously important piece of legislation as chairman of the Budget Committee, I will be speaking more about why we need to raise the minimum wage. But I want to focus on one part of the minimum wage bill that I have been hearing a little bit about in the last couple of days from some of my colleagues, and that is the provision to raise the tip wage, the tip wage, so everybody understands it, is the minimum, federal minimum wage that applies to waiters and waitresses, barbers, hairstylists, parking attendants, and others. Fellow Americans, do you know what that federal minimum wage today is for that person who waits on your table at a restaurant? It is $2.12 an hour. Yeah, you heard me correctly. $2.12 an hour. And the proposal is, as part of the minimum wage bill, the amendment that I will be offering, that tip minimum wage will go up from $2.12 an hour to $14.95 an hour over a 7-year period, longer than the overall national minimum wage would go up. And this is something that clearly is desperately needed. Now, I know that here in Washington, at any time we bring forth serious and important legislation for working people, the big money interests get to work. And all of their lobbyists who make their 6 figures or 7 figures a year, they get to work on Congress and tell you why you can't do anything to protect the most vulnerable and hard-hit people in this country. So the National Restaurant Association, they are a very powerful lobbying organization. I guess they have been enormously successful because we've not raised the federal minimum wage since 2007. So this powerful lobbying organization is going around and they're telling members of the House and the Senate that raising the tipped wage is opposed by restaurant workers, and it would be harmful to the interest of waiters and waitresses and other people. That is not true. That is what lobbyists say, representing big money interests. That's what they are paid to say. But that is not what workers who wait on tables are telling us. One Fair Wage, an organization, a grassroots organization representing service employees, waiters, waitresses, and others, has just delivered to the White House a petition with 140,000 signatures on it from service workers who are demanding that they receive the same minimum wage as every other worker in this country. And polling among service employees and non-service employees also supports the reality that Americans want our waiters and our waitresses and other service employees to get a fair and equal minimum wage, similar to what other low-wage workers are receiving.
Oh, boy. I mean, they're just singing from the same hymn sheet, aren't they? Saying it differently, but saying pretty much the same thing. And I'm glad that both of them are standing, no matter what, whether they're moderate or not, I don't really care about that at this point in terms of this, because this is something that benefits everyone. I think we do have to dispense of, since I said I'm uncomfortable with the word liberal for many reasons, because you can be a liberal racist or a liberal misogynist. I just think it's better that we just think about this as people, because the labeling gets in the way, and that's where the factions come and the tribalism I spoke about earlier this week. That has you completely looking the other way. You're not looking at, or last week, I remember whenever I did, about the bombing of Syria a week ago yesterday. And when President Biden does it, some of you are silent. But when Trump does it, oh yeah, you can make your noise. But that's just really disingenuous. Because as disgusting as Trump was and is, if Joe Biden does the same thing, or Barack Obama, or Bill Clinton, and they all did bomb, they all did drop bombs or drone strike, like Obama drone struck, like his life depended on it. But it's all despicable, it's all wrong. It's like what Malcolm X said, wrong is wrong, no matter who does it. Those are his exact words. And my goodness, that's what we should be thinking about. Wrong is wrong. It doesn't matter if it's a Democrat doing or a Republican. If anybody does it and it's wrong, it's wrong, and it's got to be called out. No silence here. Silence equals, well, it's indicting. Silence is complicity in this realm I am speaking of. As Ella Wheeler Wilcox once said, to sin by silence when we should protest makes cowards out of men and women and people. I can just add those words. It's cowardly to not speak up when this is being done. And when anybody does it, or are you going to put your hat on that says Republican? Or are you going to put your hat on that says Democrat? I think we've got to go better than that. This COVID-19 virus doesn't wear a freaking hat. It's unprotected. And only vaccines right now are saving us from being really sick from it. Doesn't mean that we can't pass this virus on, but my God, you're safer with a vaccine than you are without one. And please wear a mask. Make it two. Even if you are vaccinated already, wear a mask. Make it two masks. Please. Do the same things. Socially distance. Physically distance, rather. Avoid the large crowds. And please, get involved in this political fight so that we vote for people who are going to put us first and not second to the donor class. I know that there are at least 42 Democrats who are doing that. They're voting for us, with us in mind. There's 8 Democrats who aren't. We need to start looking at getting progressives on the Democratic side to primary these 8, these hateful 8. And the Republicans, if there's anybody like Jamie Butler Herrera that we can run, that people can run on the Republican side who have a little bit of principle in them, do it. Do it. She's in Washington State. If you're a Senate, if you're a Republican who disavows the garbage that your party's cooking up now, then why don't you start running some people who have some common sense? And I know common sense ain't common anymore, but come on. This is the chance. If we want a better world, we've got to have a better people. And we want better people, we're going to start with ourselves. Come on, we can do this. Forget the labels. It's the principle. And I'll get into principle again this weekend with a certain governor and a certain person in the Congress. And I'll go beyond that. Stay tuned this weekend, will you please? And make sure you go to the Politocrat Daily Podcast online store at the-politocrat.myshopify.com. If you want to send a comment, any suggestions for a topic you'd like to hear discussed on this podcast, and some guests that you might like to see, I can't promise that I'm going to be able to fulfill any or all of these, but if you'd like to drop a line, please do via email at politocratpod@gmail.com. That's politocratpod@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.